The other customers drowned out the words, and I missed the whole thing. Very annoying. Then, after a phone call, you left without warning. It must have been important. I need to get much closer to you somehow. So I think I'll come along to your family barbecue and see what useful snippets of information your neighbours and friends have to disclose. You see, the plan forming in my mind needs refining before next weekend, which has put me under pressure. Being honest, Conrad, you deserve to be punished for what you've done by interfering in the lives of other people. We were almost there before you came along and ruined the final chapter with your nosy questions and social media searches. No one was bothered until then. She pushed her face within inches of the lens as the last few bitter words spewed forth. Why couldn't you just accept what Matthew told you and leave well alone? He killed Helena, and he doesn't know why, any more than the judge or the jury did at the trial. So why couldn't you do as you were asked? You really should have fucked off back to your boring life instead of screwing up mine.
Chapter 17. The gathering was in full swing when Conrad decided to take a moment to observe the people in his garden drinking his beer and slurping wine he had paid for. They fell into three distinct camps: Delia's mindless sycophants, Freddie and Eliza's mates, and the real friends of Conrad himself. Barney was in charge of the barbecue, cooking up a storm and ogling the flesh-on show. Young or old, it didn't matter. Watching his good friend from a distance, Conrad laughed to himself when Barney was approached by a predatory golf club cougar, who had imbibed rather too much of the fizzy stuff. She was rubbing herself against him in a most unseemly way, and had placed a hand on the front pocket of Barney's blue and white striped apron. Barney used the grubby tongs in his hand to remove it. "Quite right. Not your type, old pal. Stay well clear. She'd barbecue your sausage for you and then leave without so much as a thank you." Delia approached her soon-to-be ex-husband.
"Are you going to make the announcement, or am I to be left to tell everyone the truth?"
"I'll do it now. I wouldn't want innocent friends and family to hear what our marriage has really been like. It would put them off their burgers." Delia smiled with her mouth and wounded with her eyes. Conrad had to remember not to look pleased with what he was about to say in a loud voice to the garden filled with people. He'd had time to think about it, and stayed right on message, as instructed. He even made them chuckle. "I have to say a huge thank you to Delia, to whom I owe a debt of gratitude for her willingness to tolerate my antics over the years, especially on return home from the Valiant." The neighbours had heard the story and laughed. He clarified for those not in the know. "The rumours are true, I'm afraid. I did mistake Delia's best vase for a urinal only last week. It seems this was the final straw, and we have chosen to separate with a view to divorce. Seriously, though, working together so closely for decades can take its toll on a marriage, and this has been a difficult decision for us. Having said that, I'm relieved to confirm that we remain business partners and friends. Please don't feel sorry for either of us. We wanted you all to be aware before the press gets hold of the news and before the official announcement tomorrow morning. There may be press hanging around the village for a while, but once things settle down, we shall see you as usual at the golf club or the pub where I shall be hanging my hat for a few weeks." He noticed one or two friends taking photos on their smartphones. "Delia and I would very much appreciate your discretion. No posting on social media until after the formal announcement, please. In the meantime, eat, drink, and be merry." Raising his glass, he winked theatrically at Delia, who smiled convincingly back at him and clinked her glass against his. They gave each other a kiss on the cheek to the sound of a few ahs. "Good God, that was really quite nauseating. I only hope they fell for it." He saw that Freddie's new squeeze, Chloe, had travelled down from North Wales. They had wedged themselves up against a tree to explore each other's mouths with tongues before Freddie would share her by introducing her to his old school friends. It had been mentioned that Chloe might arrive, but Conrad was impressed that she'd actually journeyed so far, just to have to go back the next morning by train to give an afternoon presentation at the management centre. He must have scored a hit there. But I wonder what Delia's going to think of her. She'll probably hate the sight of Chloe. No one is ever good enough for her, Freddy. Especially one as pretty as that. And one who is going to spend the night. Excellent.
Handing Barney a cold beer, he sat down away from the throng.
That went well, mate. No one would ever suspect what went on behind those prison walls, Barney said, pointing to the house. I must say, the camp commandant has some nice-smelling friends, but they're all up their own arses. Posh load of twats. I do approve of Freddy's young lady, though. What a fabulous set she has.
Barney, you're a dear friend, but that's my son's girlfriend you're perving over. She's way out of your league. In fact, I thought she was out of Freddy's, but I must have been wrong. Anyway, keep your voice down or they'll hear us.
Freddy and two of his friends had gathered to stand in front of where Barney and Conrad had perched on a low bench under a silver birch tree. The young men didn't seem to notice them and carried on talking loudly, sending up a few supportive cheers when Chloe had been taken by Eliza to be introduced to Delia. In the absence of the two girls, Freddy couldn't resist boasting to his friends about his conquest. I could easily have stayed in bed with her all day on Saturday and Sunday. She has the most amazing ways of... I won't say. You could use your imaginations, but you won't come close. Neither of you. Freddy's old schoolmates were staring after Chloe and Eliza as they made their way through the crowds to where Delia was holding court with the hairspray brigade. Chloe has to be the horniest woman I've ever met. Ever. We must have been making a hell of a racket because someone was listening outside our hotel room. We heard them during a brief pause in the proceedings, if you know what I mean. Before continuing, Freddy made a back-and-forth pumping motion with his forearm several times. We heard the floor creak really loudly right outside the door. Chloe freaked and made me wrap a towel around myself and have a look. I checked the corridor twice, but there wasn't a sign of anyone. Having lost the passion of the moment, we had to start all over again. It was worth it for round two. Conrad experienced a repeat of the private shame from the Peeping Tom moment in the hotel the weekend before. Barney, however, was finding the conversation highly illuminating. With eyes as wide as they would stretch and his mouth agape, he required a long swig of beer to regain self-control.
I've heard older women are less inhibited and like to bring a vibrator into the mix. Did you get that lucky?
One of Freddy's admiring friends asked.
And the rest?
Freddy took great delight in listing a number of sex toys that had been used.
"The works! I can't get enough of her. I could barely walk afterwards. I'm struggling now. Get yourself an older woman, boys. It's the only way to die. Come on, I need to get her away from my mother."
As the small group moved off to find Chloe and rescue her from death by Delia, Barney showered the grass in front of him with his mouth full of beer at the shock of what he had overheard. Conrad and Barney then sat in silence for a while, until Barney finally spoke.
"Do me a favour, me old mate. Get us another cold beer. I'd go myself, but the front of my chef's apron is throbbing, and I don't want people to think I've stolen one of your expensive sausages."
During a lull in the party, when his attention was not being sought, Conrad managed to find time to contact Lorna. He was thoughtful enough to shut himself in his small home office to call her, away from flapping ears. He kept the facts simple.
"Yeah, it's going better than I expected. The friends and neighbours seem to have accepted the amicable split line, and Delia is keeping her word. She makes a good actress. But then, I suppose she always has."
"That's good," said Lorna. "And I meant to ask, what was the upshot of your reply to that email? The one from the bloke who said he was Helena's ex-boyfriend?"
"Didn't I tell you? Sorry, I thought I had. He sounds as if he might be legitimate. He says he left his wife and child and moved in with Helena for a while until she forced his hand. There were no charity challenges for him. Straight-up kinky stuff. The top 10 of sadomasochism by the sounds of it. She wanted to try everything she'd read about or seen on films. The poor bloke had to leave the country in the end because she threatened to blackmail him by selling everything to the newspapers. She filmed what they did, ostensibly for them to be able to watch again and again."
"Yes, but why did she turn on him? Why blackmail him?"
"According to Mr. Bondage, that's my nickname for him, he's anonymous, of course, and used a throwaway email account, she had set 20 sex challenges, and he failed to complete them. He stopped at 13, and she was furious. She demanded his attention and that he fulfil her wish, and she saw his refusal as rejection. He called her bluff and ended the affair. A bad move on his part, as it turns out, because she unleashed her vengeance and he never worked in this country again. He was a plastic surgeon. Guess what? He made her look beautiful on the outside and the inside. He remodeled her girly bits.
What? Outside girly bits or inside girly bits?
Lorna asked, mocking Conrad for his inability to use the correct anatomical terminology. Both.
My word, what a sheltered existence I've led.
The poor man has been relegated to turning boys into girls in Thailand. He decided to be brave and told Lorna about what he and Barney had overheard in the garden.
Oh, God! So not only did you behave like a dirty old man, but you were nearly caught eavesdropping by your own son. Imagine if you'd have been a bit slower getting back to your room that morning. Run the other stuff past me again. What did you say they were using? I got vibrator, but I'm not sure about the other two or three things you mentioned.
Conrad muttered and stuttered until Lorna laughed at him.
Good grief, you old prude. Try online at Anne Summers. The website will have pictures you and Barney can look at.
Please don't tease, Lorna. It's been one hell of a long time, and I think we should change the subject before I get on the train this minute and ravage you.
That's the beer talking. Change of subject coming right up. When has Josh agreed to see you, and more importantly, where?
There was a knock at the door. I'll have to phone you back. I've been rumbled, he whispered before ending the call to Lorna. It was Freddy and Eliza. They had been sent by Delia, who was demanding her husband's presence to say farewell to guests, many of whom were leaving the worse for wear, and regretting their decision to drink on a school night, as Barney called it. Most of the men had work the next day. Conrad was dutiful, and respected Delia's wishes before heading back to his comfortable room at the Valiant Soldier. Freddy left him a brief text message to say he was going to catch the early train with Chloe and that they could meet up at the weekend.
Fair play, son. Fair play.
He hadn't felt sad or shamefaced at the thought of making the short walk from home to the Valiant Soldier with another bag full of his belongings. In fact, he had experienced an overwhelming sense of excitement at the possibility of new beginnings and a simpler life. With her parting salvo, Delia had made sure his optimism was moderated.
Good night, Con. I'll see you tomorrow evening when you collect Eliza, but after that you'll need to find somewhere else to park your possessions, including the hideous green monster of a car. We'll be keeping our relationship on a business footing from now on, and I'll only see you at meetings, awards, and so forth. The rest of the time we'll liaise by email or on the phone. Got it? I don't want you in my social circles, and most importantly, Con, you are not to rub my nose in it with that whore. I know you. You'll be creeping off to see her at the earliest opportunity. I've news on that score. She's left the area, moved away, and isn't interested in you any more.
Thanks for that, Delia. At least I know where I stand. The golf club is all yours. I'll stick to the pub for now. Good night. Although Delia was obviously trying her best to appear strong, Conrad was only too aware of how vindictive she could be if she felt she was being belittled or made a fool of. She could soon turn the affections of the media in her favour if she had good reason to. Lorna was reassuring when Conrad called her before retiring to bed. She had always been the voice of reason for as long as they had known each other.
She's right, of course. We will have to be discreet, so bring your best baseball caps for the weekend. With any luck, you might not need them. I think it's going to be chucking it down, so that'll keep any nosy individuals at bay.
Good. I want to spend time with you without having to be on constant alert. The even better news is that I'm booked in at the hotel until Tuesday. Josh Hawley and I are meeting a couple of times to sound each other out, and we were going to meet in Chester, but he loves your part of the world, apparently, and has made a reservation at the management centre from Sunday night onwards. Naomi and the rest of their team will be holding the fort at the office, so he was quite flexible with the arrangements. I tell you what, though, he sounded an awful lot like his father, which was odd at first. But he came across as being very open to discussion. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm sure you are. You'd better decide exactly what it is you need to know from him. Con, listen. I'm sorry. I'd love to chat all night, but it's late and I'm tired. Time for bed now.
The next day would be challenging. and he had decided to avoid the train for his journey to work that Friday. He had been offered the use of a driver many times, and generally turned it down, apart from journeys to gala dinners and award ceremonies. He much preferred a first-class carriage and a trip in a taxi to being chauffeured anywhere. However, common sense dictated that he should avoid being seen in public for a while, unless it was by design. He was collected the next morning in an expensive-looking Lexus driven by a cheerful Jamaican man.
"Good morning, Zachary. How are the wife and children?
I can't think how long ago it was that we last had one of our chats."
"A very good morning to you, Mr. Neil. It must be nearly 3 months since I've seen you. Settle back and enjoy the ride. When we get there, do you want to be dropped at the front entrance or somewhere less obvious?"
Conrad knew Zachary had been briefed.
"The front door is fine. Nothing to hide. As far as the public is concerned, it's business as usual, and a personal issue being dealt with sensibly and calmly."
"Right you are, Mr. Neil. Well said."
Conrad settled back into the comfortable seats and checked his phone. There were messages appearing in rapid succession. He looked up at Zachary, catching his eye in the rearview mirror.
"Here we go, Zachary. Stand by for the press interest before we get as far as the office."
The first message was from Hitgrit Films and Channel 7, his employers for The Truth Behind the Lies.
"The announcement on social media has been well received so far. There is a request for you to give a formal press statement. Are you still happy for us to proceed with the one we prepared yesterday? Raj."
No problems with that one. Next was a supportive message from Annette in her own style.
"Well done for growing balls and using them. See you soon. George and Lillian have been advised to manage reception like a fortress. Nettie."
He smiled at the thought of George and Lillian frisking those who dared to enter the revolving doors at Marriott and Weston's office block.
God help them all.
He then scrolled to the next message and froze.
"Getting divorced? You kept that quiet. How brave of you. I suppose you think this gives me less ammunition with which to persuade you to end your search. You're wrong. I have matters in hand and can shatter your dreams within days if you force me to. The lovely Lorna, your children, your new life, your career, and your reputation can all be taken from you. Delia will do the hard work. Withdraw your requests for information on social media. Now!"
A cold sensation swept over Conrad as Tessa's words sank in. She was right. He was incredibly exposed.
"A tactical withdrawal is perhaps wise. Let's see if we can calm her down a bit. Raj, it's Conrad Neil here. I'm not too bad in the circumstances, thanks for asking. Happy to go with the agreed wording for the formal press statement, but I'm also calling on another matter. I seem to have caused an upset regarding our appeal for information on Tessa Carlton. Can you put something out on social media along the lines of, 'Thanks for all your help, but we are no longer looking for information regarding this person, blah, blah, blah.' You know how it goes. Also, it might be prudent to add an apology."
"Are we about to get sued?"
"No, I don't think so. There's been a text message or two from her, and she's upset that we're trying to find her. I've assured her we'll end our search, but I'll find another way to get the information I want."
He thanked Raj and turned his attention to wording a reply to Tessa's text.
"Hello, Tessa. I am sorry to have caused you so much upset. I can confirm that I have put in a request for the social media search to be discontinued. I hope this reassures you that no harm was intended. Conrad Neil."
The reply was unsettling.
"Coward and a liar. Remember, I'll be watching."
"What does she mean? Isn't she happy now?"
"Everything all right, Mr. Neil. You've gone a bit pale. Mrs. Neil already turning the screws, is she?"
Conrad nodded.
"Something like that, Zachary."
Chapter 18.
"You are a disappointment to me, Conrad. This was supposed to be fun, but now you've ruined it by making things too easy. You plan to get divorced, and predictably your wife has thought about the long-term benefits of your professional relationship. She thinks that if you behave like a thoughtful couple, the public will continue to embrace you, and you each reap the financial rewards. Delia can stay as a business partner. How touching. Come off it, Conrad. You can't expect the public to fall for that load of old tosh.
Delia doesn't know you've met with Lorna again, does she? She'll be outraged when she does, and then all bets are off. You are infuriating. In the same way that you've convinced Delia that you care enough not to embarrass her, you have the gall to try and placate me by telling me that you have called off your media search. And yet I don't believe you. This goes against your journalistic instincts, Conrad. All you have done is go underground. You shouldn't take me for an idiot.
Chapter 19. Conrad stepped through the revolving doors at the main entrance to Marriott and Weston's, and was almost engulfed in the outstretched arms of gorgeous George, who had taken it upon himself to herd the subject of his affections into the lift and to the door of the editing suite rented by Hit Grit Films.
"Thanks, George. That's good of you, but unnecessary. As you could plainly see, hordes of press photographers were not waiting to hound me. But they should be arriving any moment, so please keep vigilant in reception. See you later."
He had again lacked thought in his choice of words.
"Later? What time will you be going for lunch? I could always fetch something for you. Call me."
George looked like a child does at a party when the arrival of jelly and ice cream is announced. He skipped back into the lift singing,
"When will I be famous?"
This moment of joy gave Conrad the most wicked of ideas.
"George, how would you like to join Annette and me for a spot of lunch? We'll pick you up from reception at 12:30. You can help me deal with the paparazzi if you like."
The screams of ecstatic delight could be heard from the top of the lift shaft.
"What have you done now?" Annette asked.
"I have a cunning plan. Until then, it's business per usual. So let's have a quick meeting. I understand Joe and Mike have some earth-shattering details to thrill us with."
"They do indeed. Coffee and a Danish await you, my lord."
After listening to the facts and leafing through the papers printed off for him, Conrad let out a slow whistle.
"I'm surprised it was Matthew Hawley who killed Helena and not her own sister. What an appalling story of child abuse, care system inadequacies, and parental fuck-ups."
"Sickening, isn't it? Can we use this?" asked Mike.
"We might have to check with the legal beagles first. Tessa has warned us off and declined to be interviewed. She's been bullying me with threatening texts, so I've pulled the plug on our social media searches for informants. What else have you got for me?"
"We've had no luck in finding her current pseudonym. Her elf records stopped when she was in care, as if she doesn't exist,"
Joe explained.
"Mike and I did manage to find out why she ended up having to leave her grandparents' home. There's a record which dates back to when Tessa was about 15, when she was hospitalized with injuries that required reconstructive surgery. Lacerations to her genitalia, cuts to her breasts, horrific stuff. No one was charged, and there was never a court case or inquiry, nothing. It's detailed in the reports we printed off. Mike and I felt it had Helena written all over it."
"Christ, does it ever?" Conrad confirmed his agreement with their hypothesis.
He suspected as much when Joe described Tessa's injuries.
Joe continued, "She ended up in local authority care, but was ultimately admitted to an adolescent mental health unit for a period of over 12 months under a section."
Mike picked up the story. "We had a hell of a job locating any of this information, and mostly it's sketchy because the social services' childcare records were almost impossible to access. But the snippets from the healthcare system helped us to piece together a rough chronology. It's not perfect by any means. If the local authority covered up this assault, and she ended up sectioned, then it's no wonder she doesn't want you to find her. Helena is dead, and therefore, Tessa can finally get on with her own life."
"If I were Tessa, I'm sure I would have either hidden from my past, or found a way to take revenge,"
Joe said, sounding confident. He seemed to have grasped the intricacies of the situation.
"Maybe both."
"This may explain what Matthew Hawley was trying to hint at," said Conrad. "But he didn't have enough of his own evidence. He killed Helena, but what if it was Tessa who put him in an impossible position? And to protect Josh, Matthew had to do as he was ordered. Take a look at the most recent text from Tessa that I received this morning. She's furious with me for trying to expose her existence. See what she has threatened to do. Imagine what she may have threatened Matthew with."
Bloody hell, we may be getting nearer the truth at last.
Annette was clearly delighted with the progress, and already considering how the abuse history could be woven into the documentary.
We're limited on time, boys, so let's keep digging.
Oh,
and avoid the press. They're going to be fishing for information on why Conrad is getting divorced. It should blow over soon, but no idle gossip, please. Not a peep.
Conrad took the paperwork from Joe with a mind to create a narration piece over the weekend. It shouldn't take long. By the way, before you go back to your skullduggery with computers, did we get any other photos of Naomi and Josh?
Not yet, sorry. We got sidetracked with this stuff. Mike wafted sheets of scribbled notes in the air.
Not the court photos. They're useless. Dressed in black and looking understandably distraught. I'd like natural ones if we can get them. That morning, Conrad was keen to revisit a certain part of his interview with Matthew. He asked Annette for her patience.
I'm certain he gave us a clue, even if he didn't know it himself.
Can we pick up where I bring Naomi into the equation? He said, looking again at himself and Matthew Hawley on the screens in front of them, psychological horns locked.
Did Josh tell Naomi that your wife had propositioned him?
Apparently so, Mr. Neil. And he also had a long discussion with me about it.
Conrad couldn't help the surprised look on his face.
That must have been extremely awkward. What did you learn?
More than I wanted to, if I'm honest. Helena had always appeared to appreciate having Naomi on the team, and she'd spent the previous 2 years training her up to take more responsibility, just as she had done with Richard. It was jealousy that changed the dynamics. Helena saw Josh as hers. She had assumed ownership as part of the package that came with me, I think. On one hand, she watched as the relationship with Naomi and Josh grew, and she was fascinated by every detail of it, while on the other, she showed signs of envy, dreadful, damaging envy. Her way of hurting Naomi was through Josh.
Yes, I understand that, but it backfired.
To a degree it did. When Josh broached the subject, he was angry with me for not believing him. This put me in a difficult position, as I had to tell him that Helena had done it as a dare, to test his loyalty to me. He was furious at that suggestion, and called Helena all the names under the sun. During our discussions, he tried to make me believe that she had led him on more than once. Josh was citing sexual harassment. I was told to get control of Helena before it ruined his relationship with Naomi and his future.
How did Naomi react to this? And more importantly, how did you deal with Helena?
None of this information had been revealed during the court case, and Conrad was now blindly seeking out fresh facts. The script had not been written for this section, nor had the research revealed anything of the hidden dynamics.
Naomi is the calmest, most rational young lady I have ever met, Mr. Neil. She did nothing to rile Helena. She carried on as if nothing had happened. But because what Helena had done drove Josh away from her and towards Naomi, the result was a fascinating crescendo of suspense. Do you know the most interesting part of all this?
Let me guess. Helena didn't fire Naomi in order to split them up that way. She found more painful methods.
Conrad was getting the measure of Matthew, and thus, vicariously, an understanding of Helena's twisted mind.
You are the man I'd hoped you'd be, Mr. Neil. Helena tried to find information to discredit Naomi. She even attempted to set her up by making it look as if she was defrauding the business, but Naomi was too clever for that. She had the backbone to speak up in front of Richard and myself to announce that she'd found unusual discrepancies in the accounts, and wanted to bring it to Helena's attention before the accountant arrived that same day. The trouble was, the longer Naomi survived Helena's deviousness, the tighter the relationship between Naomi and Josh became. It came to an explosive conclusion when they moved in together. Helena could not be reasoned with. Josh had betrayed her, and all hell broke loose. Naomi was sacked instantly, Josh resigned, and they set up in direct competition with Chorston Recruitment. Guess what name Josh and Naomi went for? Hawley Recruitment Solutions, and then they lit the blue touch paper before retiring to their own lives. They sent my wife a birthday message via a DVD recording. It featured them having the most outrageous orgy of sex with toys and gizmos that you will ever see. They spoke to the camera and waved at the end, saying something about the freedom to have sex without it being filmed by her, and that they hoped she found the final show a turn-on.
To Conrad's astonishment, Matthew was smiling and wore pride as he recounted this episode. A bold move on Josh's part. How did you fare in all of this? You were piggy in the middle, of course. He wanted to push the storyline along.
Helena used me against my own son at every opportunity.
Annette was rubbing her hands together.
There's the motive for everyone to see. How poetic. Is that what you're getting at?
Conrad was deep in thought as he let out a long breath. No. But I now understand what's been niggling at me since we filmed this. Naomi. How did she survive when Helena eats people like her for breakfast? She ruins them with blackmail or sexual enticements or both. She gets what she wants.
Helena didn't want to ruin her relationship with Josh, though, so maybe she kept her hands off Naomi because she thought she could still have her cake and eat it. Or in her case, father and son in the same bed. Filthy cow.
Do you think that was her goal?
Don't you?
He was stunned. I've been so thick. It never occurred to me that she would stoop so low. That's sick, isn't it? Is it, Annette? Please, help me with this one.
Conrad was bewildered by Annette's revelation. He had not understood what Matthew had been trying to tell him all along. Matthew Hawley had acted to save his son. By killing his wife, the woman who wanted him and his son for sex and to do her bidding and play her endless games.
Josh knew, though, didn't he?
Annette said quietly to Conrad, who was now sitting with his head in his hands, rubbing his fingers back and forth through his hair. I did mention that you'd been away with the fairy since you and Lorna split.
Yes, I appreciate I'm not at the top of my game. What you said makes sense. But why does Matthew insist that he cannot remember killing Helena? That doesn't fit. He says he was in the police station and they told him what he had done.
Conrad sighed.
At least I know what to talk to Josh Hawley about on Monday.
According to the transcript, the next discussion is about Tessa Carlton and her letters, which ties in with Josh leaving to live with Naomi. Shall we look at that quickly before lunch?
Annette asked as she helped herself to a handful of peanuts.
She caught her colleague looking at her and tried to justify her need for more calories.
I only had one Danish earlier, and I like peanuts. They help me to think.
Conrad was staring intently at Matthew Hawley, waiting for him to expand on the details of how Helena used him against his son.
How do you mean?
Our exposure in the press increased when they got hold of the story of the rival company and were keen to see pistols at dawn. Stepmother and stepson in bitter business feud. That sort of headline. As a result, I left my job to join Helena's recruitment company. In other words, I was forced to take sides and had committed myself to Helena to try and keep her reined in, for Josh's sake. Her strategies and tactics for undermining Hawley Recruitment Solutions were not unexpected. First, she tried the legal route to force them into changing their company name. When that was unsuccessful, she used more devious tactics. If a new customer happened to be a man, she was likely to win the contract. I didn't ask too many questions.
Why didn't Helena use the films of Josh and Naomi to blackmail them?
Matthew turned and frowned. Disappointing, Mr. Neal. Think about it. If Helena published those pictures, it would be revealed that she had recorded them and saved them. And let's face it, they're of her stepson and his girlfriend doing what comes naturally. No leverage there. She would have been labelled as a voyeur. Nothing more.
I see. Conrad paused. Pay attention, Conrad. That was obvious, and you looked stupid. You must listen to what he says. Watch his body language and stay focused. There has to be more. Conrad stood up. Right, that's enough. Let's collect George and have some fun and games with the press.
Annette was happy to play along with his jolly jape. She walked with him to reception and gave her apologies for not being able to join Conrad and George for lunch after all.
I've been called to a meeting with the big bosses at Channel 7, but you go ahead. Lillian, I'll take you next week. How about that?
Lillian looked thrilled and accepted the unexpected offer. George had slapped on fresh aftershave for the occasion, and powerful fumes were left in his wake as he walked from behind the reception desk. Conrad took him by the shoulders to prepare him for what to expect while they were out. George stood, back straight and eyes shut.
No, George. Open your eyes. I'm not about to kiss you. Not here. Not anywhere. Not ever. Right. Pay attention. Remember, we are going for a business lunch and representing the company, so be on your best behavior. If we are approached by anyone, they could be a reporter and might want to comment. I would really appreciate it if you could step in and ask them to respect our privacy. We'll go to the pretty Italian place up from Poncho's Deli. I think it's run by the same family. They're very thoughtful and the food is great. Ready to go?
George scampered along next to Conrad as if he was the happiest boy in town, beaming with pride. As Conrad held the door open for him when they arrived at the restaurant, Franco, the owner, showed them to a booth in the far corner away from the front window and produced a menu before awaiting their drink order.
Just a jug of water, Franco. I have a long drive ahead of me later. George, what would you like?
Water will be fine. I'm on duty. Thanks, Mr. Neil.
I tell you what. How about you call me Conrad, just while we eat lunch? It sounds too formal having you say Mr. Neil all the time while I'm eating. Franco, we'll have two bowls of your finest spaghetti alla puttanesca, please. There's nothing like a bit of prostitute's pasta to fill you up.
Is that what it means? I hope it tastes better than it sounds,
George giggled, visibly swelling with pride that he was being paid attention to. Being distracted, he had failed to notice two men who had asked to be seated diagonally across the room. The two were joined by a casually dressed young lady, and it was no time at all before the three of them were pretending to take selfies, obtaining as many photos of Conrad and George as they could get away with. George, meanwhile, was chatting in an animated fashion, telling Conrad about his pets.
There's Fluffy, the tortoise, and Lulu May, my black pussy. She's a sweetie.
All of a sudden, he stopped talking and sprung into action when the girl, who Conrad strongly suspected was a journalist, approached the table.
Excuse me, Mr. Neil. I just wanted to say how sorry I was to read about you and your wife separating. It must be hard for you.
Conrad shot a meaningful glance at George before pretending to be embarrassed, looking sheepish. George raised his hand and announced in his campest voice,
"Thank you for your concerns, but this is a private matter, and we don't wish to be disturbed at this difficult time. Isn't that right, Conrad?"
Conrad forced himself to keep a straight face by looking down at the table, ignoring the girl and trying half-heartedly to hide his features. He had spied the two men taking more photos, as did Franco, who moved them to another table, asking them to stop interrupting the private lunches of his customers.
"Well done, George. Excellent job. Now, shall we finish our pasta and get back to the offices before too many more people find us?"
He knew from bitter experience that photographers with long lenses would be waiting outside, and he kept up a light-hearted banter with George, so that when they stepped into the street, the photographers would capture a joyful scene.
"Well," Annette asked, "how did it go?"
Conrad was still chuckling to himself.
"It was the finest performance of my career. George was being his natural self, and the media will have a field day. He swears on his black pussy's life that he will not say a word to the press. I did suggest that he could brush off their questions by telling the truth and confirming that he and I are work colleagues."
"Do you think it will make Saturday's paper? Or will they dig about for more and turn it into a Sunday saga? I think you'd better warn Delia about your smokescreen, just in case the silly cow takes it seriously."
"Good plan."
Fortunately for Conrad, Delia found the whole idea of deceiving the press quite amusing.
"It's a brilliant plan. Once they've been made to look foolish, they'll give up on our divorce story as soon as we've announced how disgusted we are with their assumptions and false accusations. Well done, Con. You must have learnt something from me after all our years together.
I can't wait to read what they have to say. And while you're on the phone, I've told Barney I want our old car back. Say you owe him money.
She giveth and she taketh away. Chapter 20. Conrad had never been driven so speedily by Zachary before, but the man had been given a special task to get him out of the city and back home in record time, and was rising to the challenge.
"Watch out for the speed cameras,"
Conrad advised, trying to read his emails and messages as the car weaved its way through the traffic and onto the motorway. Eliza had phoned to confirm that she was packed and ready to go whenever he was, and was cheering him on.
"Come on, Dad. The faster you get here, the more likely we'll miss the Friday motorway chaos."
He had given up concentrating at work. The demands from the press had increased throughout the day, and although this was dealt with through the Channel 7 PR machine, it resulted in endless interruptions to his concentration and to the work in the editing suite. He was determined to ignore the requests for interviews, and arranged for Zachary to collect him from outside a fire exit at the side of the building shortly after 2 o'clock.
"Thanks for this, Zachary. I hope I haven't messed up your timetable for the day."
"No problem, Mr. Neil. It's what I'm here for. You seem to have hit a few of the national radio stations with news of your divorce. I'm sorry. It must be a dreadful day for you."
"I expect the media will be full of wild speculation," Conrad said, smiling to himself. "I'm like anyone else, Zachary. My marriage is at an end, and that's how it is. No great scandal, no shameful traumatic scenes. Life goes on."
"You're so right, Mr. Neil. It'll be yesterday's news before tomorrow."
Conrad smiled in response. He had trouble working out what the last sentence actually meant, but nevertheless, Zachary's philosophical moment had made him chortle. A trip to Wales would seem to be the perfect response to the announcement of his divorce, and he would be expected to disappear for a few days in the circumstances. No doubt the press would park outside his house, but their stay would be unwelcome, and Conrad was sure they would seek better and more exciting news elsewhere by Monday at the latest. Delia had returned to her frosty self by the time he called to collect Eliza, and he didn't have to make more than a perfunctory effort to be polite. He couldn't be bothered with the game of keep Delia happy. He'd had years of that.
"I've just dropped in to see Barney, and he's bringing the car back for you in a few minutes with the paperwork. You might have to get a replacement registration document. We signed the current one, but luckily Barney hasn't sent it off."
"Can't you do that for me?" Delia asked testily.
"I thought you wanted the car as part of the divorce settlement, dear. If you do, then as the current registered keeper and owner of the vehicle, I'll have to sign it over to you. The least you can do is organize the paperwork. Oh, and don't forget to tax it."
Conrad picked up Eliza's bags and boxes and loaded them into the back of the Discovery.
"That'll piss her off. She never deals with basic everyday life, like taxing vehicles, organizing plumbers, having the central heating boiler serviced, or cleaning out the gutters. It's almost a shame I'll miss the entertainment when this dawns on her."
"Eliza, are you ready?"
he shouted up the stairs as Delia found her voice.
"You may be enjoying this at the moment, Con, but my solicitor will be in touch very shortly. I shall be citing unreasonable behaviour as grounds."
Getting pissed up and piddling in her vase was worth it after all.
"Excellent." "As you like, dear."
"Please stop calling me dear,"
Delia hissed, just before Eliza appeared to kiss her on the cheek and spring into the car, full of enthusiasm for life.
"Okay, let's get the green machine going. Yee-haw!"
She laughed and waved goodbye to her mother, who stood stiffly at the door for a matter of seconds, before trotting back inside.
"She didn't hang around long. I guess she's off to the golf club to swoon over Rolf, the new golf professional."
"Rolf teaches golf," Conrad teased. "Does he look like a wolf?"
Eliza was amused by her father's cheerful banter and joined in.
"Yes, Rolf the wolf teaches golf, and likes the odd milf."
"What's a milf?"
"Dad, where have you been? It's an acronym. M-I-L-F. Mothers, I'd like to... you know."
"No, I don't know. Lately I'm finding out a variety of things I didn't know. And I think I'm not as worldly wise as I pretend to be."
Eliza gave him the sort of pitying look that most adult children give their parents at one time or another. A look of despair.
For a man with your reputation, you are dangerously out of touch with the milieu.
Christ! Milieu, is it now? I'm glad the money your university fees are costing me is being put to good use. Now then, prove yourself worthy and tell me what you really make of Freddy's girlfriend.
Eliza raised one eyebrow and turned her head towards the window. You're not too impressed with her, I gather from that expression. She's Freddy's type, but not my idea of a potential friend.
Because...
Eliza sighed. Her father was in interview mode. Because she's a bit false. Fake eyelashes, not a hair out of place, sweetness and light, with a he-he-he, and an, oh, please forgive me for being so forward, I'm not usually like this. Bollocks.
That sounds like a description of Delia when she's had a few and flirts with the movers and shakers of the television world. Awful.
Conrad drove as fast as he dared until they reached the N6 and Birmingham, when they slowed dramatically to chug slowly with the flow of traffic. By the time they had picked up speed again, he was somewhat wiser about Chloe.
I thought she was quite bright and career-minded.
Eliza shook her head. I'm not too sure about that, either. She was tight-lipped on the specifics, but she works as an event organizer for career conventions and shows. I thought we might have something in common, but we don't. Mum seemed to take to her, though.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, I might be wrong, but I think Chloe is toying with our Freddy. There are no facts as such, but I think she may have a more permanent boyfriend in the background somewhere. Just a hunch.
Poor old Freddy. He's going to get burnt playing with fire. Anyway, enough about him. How's your love life these days? You don't seem to have a significant other. At the moment. If that's the right expression. No one good enough for my Eliza.
I work at a slower pace than my brother, that's all. I am seeing someone, but I have this underlying fear of being labelled a slut. It's always different for boys. They're Casanovas, playboys, seducers or wolves, terms which seem to have acceptable connotations. If I behaved like Freddy, I'd be a sapper, loose, a trollop or a tart, and I don't want to be seen in that way. Besides which, the media keep an eye on Freddy and me from a distance, and we can't afford any scandal.
You wait till tomorrow, Conrad warned, with a wicked grin appearing. The press were at my offices today, within hours of the social media announcement. And I've been a very naughty boy.
Go on.
I took Gorgeous George to lunch as a deliberate setup, and the press fell for it. Photos as well. I can't wait for tomorrow when they wrongly accuse me of being a closet gay.
I understand the intention, Dad, but did you have to?
He acknowledged his daughter's disapproval and his use of underhand tactics. He tried to reason with her. It'll help to settle them down quicker about the divorce, especially if they make assumptions and get it wrong. It was fun. George enjoyed himself, and no harm was done.
Conrad chuckled at the memory of George's performance. Then he and Eliza settled into an easy conversation, with comfortable silences. He savoured his daughter's welcome company. I'll give Freddy a ring while I think of it. I hope he's not entertaining Chloe at the flat. I'll be furious. We've got so much to sort out, and he has a dreadful habit of disappearing when there's work to be done. I'm glad you're around to help me put up shelves and stuff. He's a dead loss.
I could never work that one out. You would always be the child in the garage with me, asking which tool did what and helping to paint, while your brother was daydreaming elsewhere or playing with his mates on a computer.
Some things don't change. Oh, hello, Freddy. We're about an hour away, probably more. Are you around for when we get there? I've got some stuff from home to cart up to the flat. Right. Oh, dear. See you later tomorrow, maybe. Or maybe not. Do what you like. You usually do.
Conrad could tell by the irritation on Eliza's face and in her voice that her brother was being true to form.
As I said, some things don't change. He's out and probably won't be coming back to the flat tonight. Great. So I'm on my own for the evening.
I'll have dinner with you and keep you company. Don't worry. At least you can have the place to yourself. Whereas I will no doubt have to suffer the indignity of seeing my son at breakfast in the hotel eating his new girlfriend. It's not that pleasant.
He tried to physically shake the image from his head, making Eliza laugh at him. You won't have to put up with it after that. Freddy's in a foul mood. Apparently, Little Miss Perfect has been ordered to cover an event in Hertfordshire and must go home tomorrow. What a shame.
Conrad pulled off the A55 into some services for a short comfort break.
Just say you need a pee, Dad. I'll grab a pint of milk. It's the one thing I forgot to pack.
He made sure he raced back to the car, giving him enough time to call Lorna, while Eliza shopped for a few more essentials. I'm spending the rest of the evening with Eliza at the flat, but we'll meet tomorrow at the Warren. The usual car park down by the beach. You remember? If the weather is foul, we could hightail it up to the South Stack. Sounds good? See you after lunch, then. Yes. I'll wear one of my most attractive hats and an all-encompassing waterproof jacket. See you then. Bye, Lorna. He said, ending the conversation a little awkwardly. He wanted to call her darling, or at least another term of endearment, but he felt that she wouldn't take it well until he had finished his probationary period of trust-building. Barney must have been reading his mind.
Are you there yet? And have you got your hand down Lorna's bra?
Bloody idiot.
No to both. Now bugger off. I'll see you in the Valiant on Wednesday for a pint.
Eliza was climbing into the passenger seat as Conrad was finishing his reply to Barney.
New girlfriend already?
She asked cheekily.
Barney's not really my type. Besides, he takes up too much room in the bed.
You slept with him?
Eliza wrinkled up her nose.
We've shared a bed many a time, me and Barney. Nothing wrong with two drunken bums in a bed when the need arises. Or when your mother locked me out. Where do you think I slept when I wasn't at home?
Conrad was grinning at the memories of the inebriated exploits he and Barney had engaged in over the years. Eliza managed to unhinge his smile.
I always thought you were at your girlfriend's house. You did have one, didn't you?
God, why did you create such a bloody bright girl with the inquisitive mind of a detective?
His face answered her question.
I thought as much, she said. You've been so down the last few months. I assume Mother found out and you had to do as you were told.
Conrad was lost for words. He had wanted to tell Eliza and Freddy about Lorna, but not yet, not until he was certain that she would have him back in her life permanently.
Look, Dad, we're adults. You and Mum have been at each other's throats for years, and, quite frankly, it's a relief that you're getting divorced. At least you stand a chance of being happy. Get a girlfriend, live a little, and do it soon. I don't suppose the old one will have you back.
I'm working on it.
Eliza looked across at her father.
God, you are, aren't you? That's a serious expression on your face. I'd like to meet the woman who has that impact on my dad. When you're ready, of course.
How old are you again? I must have been stuck in a time warp, because all of a sudden, my daughter has become a mature, confident, assured and capable lady.
Thanks. And yes, you must have been in a time warp to use the expression comfort break instead of pee, and to not know what a MILF is.
Chapter 21.
Oh no, here they come. Good morning, Freddy. And good morning, Chloe. It seems we're destined to see each other at breakfast whenever I'm staying here.
Conrad tried to be polite, but he wasn't feeling it. He had deliberately found a table for two where he could be alone in the restaurant, and had spread the Daily Albion out, propping the top half on the crockery and condiments. Much to his irritation, Freddy and Chloe deliberately sat at the adjacent table and engaged him in conversation.
I might be along later this morning, Dad, or maybe this afternoon.
Don't tell me. Talk to your sister. I'm putting up a few shelves in your flat this morning, and that's about it. I'm not around this afternoon. So you'll have to apologize to Eliza for leaving her to do the work, Freddy. She's sorting out the kitchen, bathroom, the lounge, and is not impressed with your contribution.
He gave his son the disapproving dad look.
There's nothing much left for me to do, then, by the sounds of it, Freddy laughed.
This dismissive response from his son irritated Conrad, who scowled.
Really?
I'll help her as soon as you can. You see, Chloe has to leave tonight. So I was hoping to spend time with her today.
Perhaps we could help at the flat for an hour or two, Freddy, Chloe offered sweetly.
I see what Eliza means. That's all a bit false nicey-nicey. And so is she.
He took a furtive closer look at Chloe, noting the heavy makeup accentuating her brown eyes and her long, wavy auburn hair, neatly tied with a hairband at the nape of her neck.
She had sculpted eyebrows that seemed to be the fashion, but she didn't have any great long talons for fingernails. Instead, Chloe had neatly manicured hands, shiny nails, but not painted. No wedding ring. Freddy seemed to hang on her every word, which for some reason that morning Conrad found sickening.
"Do you have any particular plans for this afternoon, Mr. Neil?"
Chloe asked, smiling broadly. "She sounds like a bloody hairdresser. Going anywhere nice on holiday this year?" "I'm meeting a friend, and we're going to Anglesey to revisit some old haunts. I'm looking forward to it." Conrad made it clear that his plans were not for changing.
"So we may see you before I have to leave, then?"
"Perhaps. I'm not sure what my timetable is. Probably dinner in my room. I have a business meeting on Monday, and possibly Tuesday. And I'll be keeping my face away from public places over the weekend."
"Dad doesn't usually wear a baseball cap to breakfast,"
Freddy explained unnecessarily.
"It's been nice meeting you. I hope we bump into each other again sometime."
"Thanks." He looked down at the newspaper in front of him, trying to ignore Freddy and Chloe. Their very presence was annoying him, and it took a few moments to work out why. When it came to him, it was simple. Freddy had become a male version of Delia. He wanted to look good, swan around with beautiful people, take advantage of what he could, and not want to get his hands dirty. Eliza, on the other hand, was a female version of himself, only braver. Conrad loved them both, but he wanted to shake Freddy and then give him a swift kick up the arse.
"On the subject of money, Freddy, have you secured a job for the summer? Because I'm letting you know now that with an expensive divorce pending, my income isn't going to stretch to supporting you kids at uni as well as paying for your mother's lavish lifestyle. I'll pay for the fees and the rent on your flat, but the rest is down to you."
"Actually, Dad, I wanted to speak to you about that. Chloe is based not too far from London, so I was wondering if there were any jobs going at Channel 7 for a few weeks or so."
He looked his son square in the eye, and after a short, meaningful pause said, "I think it's time you found your own work, Freddy. As your mother is about to strip me bare, there will be no coattails for you to hang on to. Step up now, sunshine. Perhaps Chloe could help." Conrad looked across at the girl and caught a glimpse of a furious expression, before hammering his point home. "I'm sorry if you were expecting me to invent a job for you. It doesn't work like that anymore. But Eliza seemed to think she could offer bar work for the summer." "Come on, Freddy, I've had enough of your mother taking me for a ride with nothing in return, and I'm not doing the same for you. Time to grow up, my boy."
"I don't want to do bloody bar work," an indignant Freddy protested. Having heard enough, Conrad stood up, folded the newspaper, and tucked it under his arm.
"I'm sure you'll find something. Good morning."
With that, he left the dining room. He turned to look back when he reached the exit and saw his son with hands held in the air as if unable to explain where he had gone wrong. Chloe's mouth was a thin slit.
"Well, Freddy, she doesn't look too impressed with you now."
The rain had held off during the morning of DIY, and after a bite to eat, courtesy of Eliza, it was time to head over to Anglesey and to the beach car park to meet up with Lorna. She had already arrived, so Conrad parked the green machine next to her car. Lorna had her walking boots on, ready to go by the time Conrad had retrieved his from the back of his car, and she chatted as he did up his laces.
"It's a bit chilly for nearly summer. Never mind. We've hit the tide times right. It's still going out, so we can have a good wander around the island."
"I'm nearly ready. Hat on, phone off," he said as he went to press the button to switch off his mobile.
However, he thought better of it when he saw notification of 3 messages.
"Shall we look at these first? I'm dying to know what the fallout is from my early lunch with George yesterday. There was only a hint in the Daily Albion that I may have been out with a gay friend trying to cope with the agony of my pending divorce, and all that crap. But the photos were funny."
"Yes, let's have a look. Then we can ignore the phone after that for a few hours."
"Right. The first message is from Annette. Usual piss take. Sends her love. Then the next one is from Barney. I'll never sleep with you again. You got me into your bed under false pretenses, you bastard. See you for a pint on Wednesday."
Conrad and Lorna laughed while looking at each other in appreciation of Barney's sense of humour. Looks like some of the papers have fallen for it. That's good news. Delia will be sending the slap on the wrist to the editors, and the job will be done.
He moved on to the third message. You say one thing and do another. I warned